All right, welcome to the first Bluminati podcast of 2022. I'm your host, Nathan Bond. Join alongside me, as always, Seth Varnador and Robert Stieg as we discuss the news of the day. Folks, there's a new offensive coordinator in town, and he's heading down the field. We got Travis Trickett, former FAU offensive coordinator, former Georgia State offensive coordinator. He is moving on from West Virginia, where he was the inside wide receivers coach as well as tight ends coach. Let's shoot from the hip real quick. Initial thoughts, and we'll get deeper into it, Seth.
All right, just so we don't confuse everyone, every time I kept reading Travis Trickett, I was thinking Travis Tritt. So this is a Travis Trickett. This is Travis Trickett's face on Travis Tritt, just so everyone understands that part. And is, yeah, okay. Anyways, I think this is an upgrade just because I think that the problems that need to be fixed aren't really complex. I think there were some home runs out there to be hit. I don't know if this is a home run. I think it is, you're getting on base though. So I think it's a good hire. I think it's a safe hire. When you add in the recruiting element, I think it makes it even more positive. But this is not a total, I don't think it's a total home run, and we'll talk about that. But I do think the way he operates, the schemes he runs, what he kind of emphasizes on offense, I think will fit this roster well. It'll kind of remain to be seen. I don't think it's a home run like Willie Corners, a guy like that, could have been, but I think it's a solid hire, and he will fit the personnel pretty well here, I think. So I think it's an upgrade, but we'll find out more in the coming weeks, I'm sure. But Steve, what about you? What do you think?
Right. Yeah. It's, when, you know, his name was first kind of floated a little bit more seriously. It's not the sexy hire. You know, I think that's, you know, we didn't get the sexy girl. You know, we asked a few different girls to prom, and, you know, it sounds like we got a few rejections right off the bat, but it's not the sexiest hire you could have gone for, but it is pretty damn good. You know, I think, like we've kind of alluded to, there are, you know, a few question marks and a few, you know, things that need to kind of be addressed, which we'll obviously go over, but there's a lot of intangible things. You know, I mentioned it, the way he basically presents himself, and, you know, the way that he gets his team ready and game plans week in and week out. I mean, it's beautiful. It was like music to my ears. But, you know, you can't sugarcoat some of the shortcomings, but, you know, that's kind of the nature of where we're at right now as a football team, as a program, as a university, where, you know, the sexy people weren't in our league, unfortunately, and you had to roll with punches. And, you know, I still think this is a solid hire for us, though.
Yeah, you know, I think when we did the podcast, last week or the week before, when Charlie Weiss Jr. left, we had our hot board. Travis Trickett was not on the hot board. It was not a hot board in the typical sense where it was kind of inside information. These were just the guys that we were.
It was a Varnador and Bond consulting company.
Yeah, and you know, I think Willie Corn was still at the top of the list, but I think having Grayson McCall come back for another year, it's really hard to leave a guy you know so well, who has shown success at the collegiate level, to come into a place where you're coming off a 2-win season. I think as a team, you threw 5 touchdowns, and I may be overselling that amount of touchdowns. It's really tough for you to kind of get someone like that. Now, Travis, you know, he's got connections to Florida. It makes a lot of sense. His dad coached at Florida State. He was a GA at Florida State, and he has recruited South Florida very well. And Seth, you and I have talked about that being a bit of a shortcoming for this coaching staff, you know, even prior to Jeff Scott, you know, Charlie Strong brought in some guys to recruit South Florida, and they kind of whiffed on those guys as well. So if they can shore up that South Florida area, you know, where you can, you know, maybe steal a Dietrich Nichols type, or I'm not going to say you're not going to find Quentin Flowers every single day, but steal those kind of caliber players again, it can really help you. And, you know, I was talking to, I went out to Vegas in late November, early December, and spent some time with Sean King watching NFL football. I highly recommend you doing that, hanging out with a former NFL quarterback, watching the NFL. Man, the amount of stuff you learn in you know, 4 or 5 hours is pretty impressive. But he was saying, you know, a lot of USF, it seems they're too scared to recruit the questionable caliber guys. They want the high character, and I get that, but you need to be able to win and roll the dice a little bit. And that's kind of where Willie Taggart was very successful at, rolling the dice on some of those South Florida kids who just needed to get out, get a chance, and get your Dietrich Nichols, get your Darnell Solomons, you know, when you can hit on those guys and then go from there. If Travis can shore that up, I think it's a great hire. Not the sexy pick, I mean, but he does have great flowing locks.
Beautiful voice. I think what's interesting kind of about that portion of the recruiting side is right before COVID hit, I think it might have even been March, I went to the USF Coaches Clinic in Jeff Scott's first year, and he was talking about his recruiting strategy and what he'd hoped to do. And he talked about, he said, we're not really going to compete very often with the Alabamas, the Floridas, the Georgias, the Clemsons, the, you know, Florida States and Miamis of the world. He's like, we'll pick a couple kids every cycle. He's like, but we got to start beating the Indianas and the Kentuckys, the West Virginias was one he mentioned specifically. Those type of Power Five teams, he said, we got to start beating those in Florida. So this might be a little bit of a, if you can't beat them, join them. Go out and grab the guy that signed some kids. And he, from what West Virginia people said, he beat Miami for a kid last year, I think. So he's won some pretty big battles there for West Virginia when they'd gotten out of South Florida for a little bit. So I think it's, especially on that side, it's a good hire. And I think he'll kind of bring a steadiness and upgrade on the scheme side too. So I think it'll be a good fit, but you know, we'll have to see. It's hard to tell exactly until you actually see them play and see how he calls plays and all that kind of stuff. But you know, first blush, I understand. You can understand why the hire was made. Like, it makes sense. Okay, this makes sense. I think we said at the end of our hot board video that it may be somebody that's not on here. This is just what we kind of would like to see. It doesn't mean whoever gets hired, if they're not on here, is a bad hire. It's kind of what ended up happening. But yeah, I don't think it's a bad hire at all. I think it definitely makes sense and you understand it. At first blush, it was kind of a really, but as you dig in a little bit more and listen a little more and kind of find some clips of him speaking and then dig into the recruiting side, it definitely makes sense why they want to go this way.
Hey, absolutely. I mean, and first and foremost, any barometer that you need to take on a coaching hire when, you know, you're getting someone away from another program is to see how their fan base reacts. And the West Virginia fan base was not too pleased about losing Travis Trickett. And I think that's really what you need to know right now is he was – one of the guys that they wanted to keep around at West Virginia. They're coming off a subpar season by their standards, but he was the guy that, you know, the fan base wanted to keep, especially our counterparts over at Smoking Musket. They are very high on Travis Trickett and they're sad to see him go. So getting him on board is a step in the right direction. Now he's bounced around a little bit. You know, he had some good success at Samford, and then kind of, I think, see, you put it best in the article that we posted. He got the Kerwin Bell treatment, kind of a 1 year. You got to fix everything, otherwise we're going to get fired. And they still got fired and was not retained by Lane Kiffin heading into 2017 at FAU. And then spent a couple years at Georgia State under Sean Elliott. That didn't work out. Surprise, surprise. And then now, you know, found himself at West Virginia. So he's a bit of a journeyman the last few years. But the thing that I liked seeing, just kind of going through his yearly progression from FAU to, you know, the 2 years that he coached at Georgia State, is they were, I'm going to hate saying this word, but they were pretty multiple throughout. Like at FAU, they ran the ball really well. Their first year at Georgia State, they had a quarterback, I think, throw for over 3,000 yards, if I'm not mistaken, or pretty close to it. Yeah, Connor Manning threw for 3,100 yards, and they didn't run the ball as much. They had their leading rusher rush for 594 yards. And then in 2018, with Connor Manning gone, they rushed the ball a lot more. They had a few guys, you know, Dan Ellington, 2,100 yards throwing the ball. And then they had two guys with over 100 yards, over 100 carries, a couple of more with at least 30 carries. So they kind of spread the ball around. And then at FAU, they had two guys. I think one went for 1,100 yards on the ground. Another went for another 800. Both had double-digit rushing touchdowns. So he kind of fits what he wants to do to the personnel that he has, which is kind of all we want from a coach at this point, right? It's just kind of scheme to what you have and then go from there. So if he continues that trend of, okay, I have this, we can do X and Y, we can't do Z, let's not do Z ever again until we have that personnel to do so, that's where we want to see it from. Seth, you've watched a little bit of the film. Let's throw up that first drive in 2018. It's the first drive for Georgia State at NC State in 2018, and it's a, I believe it's a 3-play drive that ends in a touchdown.
Yeah, this is just throwing up, and we'll probably get more in depth in the coming weeks. But just with the hire happening today, we threw some stuff up real quick, but. Hey, this is, look at this. It's allowed. Two backs in the backfield. You can do it. And then three receivers, it looks like. So this is your classic 20 personnel. We were kind of, that's one thing that I was thought we'd definitely see last year with USF. They didn't really get into a lot of different personnel groupings, so didn't get a chance to see it. But here's the first play. Use the, this is a little basically smash, tried and true, one of my favorites. But condense the split, give him room to run the corner out in the flat, high low him right there, put it on him.
An easy down. Read for a quarterback too.
Yeah, smash is one of the most simple plays, but it's very. It can, you can run it almost against anything. It's my favorite passing concept. A good old smash. Always a winner. So that's play one. Play two. Whoa. One back. It looks like four receivers here. That's your classic 10 personnel. One back, no tight ends, four receivers. It's another one. We thought, hey, that'd be cool if USF got a little more 10 personnel. They got a bunch of good receivers. Didn't get in it a ton, got in there a little bit. This isn't a great example of scheme, but make a play down the field. They're, at least they're calling some vertical routes, taking a shot. But just kind of looking at the different personnel groupings. I think it's just, I would guess it's just another kind of simple read for the quarterback. To this side, it looks like it's just go route and an out route. If the corner turns and runs, then you got the one-on-one here with to the out route. If the corner sits, you got the go route. I'm guessing that's what the call was. I can't see the full field, but it kind of looks like it when you see him here and other one down the field there. And then second and goal here in the red zone. check this out. Three receivers, one tight end, one back, 11 personnel. So that's three different personnel groupings on this first drive. And then we'll all enjoy this. You got an athletic quarterback. What can you do? How about a little speed option? And then nice wrinkle here in the red zone. You know you're going to get man coverage. So if I come inside, he's probably going to come with me. So what can I do? I'm going to get myself a 2-for-1 here by cracking the safety with the receiver. Right there. He's trying to get over the top because he thinks it's a route. He's getting the block right there. 2-for-1 for a touchdown. So that's just kind of a quick look at some stuff. Good first drive there against North Carolina State. But you saw some different personnel. You saw them take kind of really take advantage of what their quarterback could do. And I know there's been a video going around of his game planning process. And one thing that he said in there that I thought was great, that I thought maybe was an issue in the past at USF or the past couple of years, is it looks good on the board, but can your guys do it? If they can't do it, don't call it. That's kind of almost an exact quote from him. He said, it looks good on the board, but can they do it? That's something that takes some time as a coordinator and a play caller. And I've been there too. Like when you're younger and you're first starting, you're like, this play looks good. It will work. But if the guys can't get it, it's not going to work. You can't just keep trying to push it. And you will when you're younger because you're like, whatever, this play should work. But you realize as you coach a little bit longer that, all right, yeah, it may be great. I may know how to do everything on the board, but it's what my players can do that counts. So it doesn't matter what I can do on the board. It's what can I teach my players and have them execute. So that's an important lesson. It seems like he's learned that. He grew up in a coaching family, so I'm sure he's heard all these old adages. But that was a good one to hear. And he had some other really insightful things he said in his game planning that it was good to see. And I think Stieg will probably go into that a little bit later, but good first drive there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you mentioned that that second play was kind of a broken play, but three plays, three different personnel groupings, one of which we never saw. And then, the 20 personnel with the two running backs in the backfield, another one, the 10 personnel we saw maybe 12 times. And I thought it could have been
one of their best. That could have been a really good group for them because they spread people out and then you let Timmy run or your backs run in a light box. Would have been great, but didn't come to pass.
And, you know, what's interesting is they ran that 10 personnel against Florida. That was their personnel grouping. I think it was Timmy in the second half. That had a lot of success, and then they just never went to it ever again, which is that was the reoccurring thing with Charlie Weiss Jr. You'd see a little bit of it and then just never go to it again. And that's the frustrating part as a fan base. You guys watching it and listening, you know, they do a little bit. It's the prime example is that Tulane game. That first drive was fantastic and then never went back to it again. You got to build on some of the stuff that you're able to do. And you know, I think Travis is going to be able to do it. I think it's a pretty solid hire. Stieg, you've done quite a bit of research on him. Is there anything that we haven't said already? Maybe you want to, you know, kind of bring up, you know, good or bad that, you know, people should know about.
You think we should start with the bad? Like, there is some risk, right? There is some bad.
Right.
Why don't you start with, like, we understand there's, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, right? What is kind of the bad?
Yeah. The offensive statistics from his last three stops, so the two seasons at Georgia State and then the one year at Florida Atlantic, I mean, the offensive statistics were, for lack of a better term, bad, surprisingly. a little bit better than what USF was at, but, you know, still not too terribly great. At FAU in 2016, he was 80th. Georgia State 2017, 117th. And then Georgia State 2018, 104th in, you know, total statistics here. And so, you know, not great. Georgia State and, or obviously, you know, at FAU, he was not retained on Lane Kiffin's staff. Found his way to Georgia State. Got Georgia State to 7 wins the first time being bowl eligible in FBS football in their 4th season of playing FBS. So, neat thing. And then the year after that, they went 2-10. So, you know, the offense was rather inconsistent. The defense that year was terrible. They lost a lot of the production that they had in 2017 going into the 2018 year, particularly on the offensive line. So, you know, I think the brief 3 years that we can look that he had in FBS, I mean, he wasn't dealt the cleanest of hands. It was FAU on their last leg, an upstart Georgia State team, and then a Georgia State team that lost all of their senior production and everything that was good from the year prior. I think they returned their leading receiver and that was it. So, you know, you got to kind of look at it within the context of it. So not too great, but the good side of the things that you can look at were his years at Samford. That's where he really probably, you know, got his mark. You know, he came up and as Nate and Seth had mentioned, he was raised within a football family, not a big, you know, football guy himself wasn't, you know, collegiately playing, but his brother Clint is a you know, pretty good standout quarterback, and his dad Rick is a legendary offensive line coach. That's how he got his start at West Virginia as a student assistant under Rich Rodriguez. So starts there, goes to Alabama for a year, works with Nick Saban, mentors John Parker Wilson and Greg McElroy, and then goes to Florida State with his dad again. Mentors Christian Ponder and EJ Manuel, worked with Bobby Bowden and Jimbo Fisher. So he's got the pedigree there, learned probably everything he knew from those three guys by themselves, and then really hit the ground running at Samford. I mean, promoted to offensive coordinator after 1 year, got Samford their first first conference championship in school history. So, you know, he had pretty good amount of success at Samford, and then unfortunately, you know, took a bad hit when he got Kerwin Bell to Florida Atlantic, and that's kind of where he ended up being. And, you know, he's worked his way back up. And I'm honestly surprised we got him away from West Virginia because, I mean, the Trickett family is West Virginia. Clint and Rick were, you know, through and through all there. And then I think their younger brother, the youngest brother, went there as well. So to steal a guy whose dad, two brothers, and his wife went there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, his entire family is West Virginia. And we somehow were able to be like, yeah, come to sunny South Florida. I'm sure, you know, you love coming here for recruiting time. Imagine living here full time. So, but ultimately, for any hesitancy and any questions or anything like that, that 40-minute, you know, game planning thing that was from his time at Georgia State, I think before the 2018 season, I mean, it is just beautiful, beautiful to listen to. And the three main takeaways that I can kind of go off of that, and there's a lot of information there. Number one, he watches a shit ton of film. Like, he mentioned going into that 2018 season, they were playing Kennesaw State in that first game. And that was the first time they played them. He wasn't too familiar with them. He watched every single game leading up to Kennesaw State, watched every single game they had the year before and the year before that as well to try to prepare, and then kind of compared, all right, you know, what do I run on offense? What is our bread and butter? Who kind of runs similar offenses to that? And how can I game plan to what they have already shown their hands to? Because defensive coordinators have their, you know, their set scripts that try to go off to. They have their identities, just like offensive coordinators do. So the amount of film and prep work that he does per week is just absolutely ridiculous to prepare for whatever opponent it is. The second thing is, he said this with like such enthusiasm, it's feed the studs. Feed the guys on the team that are playmakers. The more your best players touch the ball, the better you are and the more likely you're going to win a game. You know, he's not going to sit there and try to, you know, be cutesy or anything like that. Like, he, the Brian Batiste and Jimmy Horns of the world are going to get the ball in their hands in this offense.
He mentioned, and I know he mentioned he's got it written on his call sheet. And I've been placed for you to do that. You write it on your call sheet. These plays, I got to call these. These are plays I have to call, and they usually involve a one or two guys. I've got to get them the ball. Or you have it where you have, you know, a set list of plays for them, and then you, okay, I got it. And he mentioned kind of being like, okay, I need to call a play for this guy, or I need to call a play for this guy every drive. And he mentioned his receiver that he have. I think Penny Hart, who is turned into an NFL receiver, he talked about, you know, yeah, we targeted him like 15 times or 18 times, and he had 14 catches. He's like, he's the best player. I'm going to throw him the ball. So, and Matt makes it easier on the quarterback too, because you're manufacturing touches for a single guy. So it makes it a little bit easier to know that, okay, this is a play designed to get the ball to Jimmy Horn. Let's get the ball to Jimmy Horn. Make it easy on the quarterback. I don't got to read six different things. I understand this is for Jimmy Horn. And then if that's not there, probably one thing off that. So that was if you're a person, I know we saw some people like kind of lamenting the fact that Jimmy Horn didn't get a ton of touches last year, and we've been among that group. I think this guy understands that your best players need to touch the ball as much as possible, and
right,
that's a good thing.
Quite good. And then I'm going to sneak this one in here at 2.5 for the Spark Notes version of it. He talked about a gold zone, and Seth, I don't know if you've ever heard anyone mention this. This was the first time I've ever heard it. But basically, most defense coordinators have like a certain segment of the field that they, you know, really tear ass into. Usually it's after you cross the 50. No. It's like the 50 to like the 35. Defensive coordinators will usually, you know, balls to the wall, will just, you know, do everything they can to prevent any sort of score there.
Yeah.
He emphasizes that week in and week out to that. That's where the game is going to get won. You know, it's not just about, you know, getting down to the red zone or anything like that. You got to be able to, you know, win the game between the 50 and the 35.
Yeah. He was saying that, you know, there's going to be a spot. Once you cross the 50, there's going to be a spot where defensive coordinator ratchets up the pressure. And he's like, almost everybody has this somewhere. You got to find it, but there's going to be a spot where, all right, and like Steve mentioned, maybe once you're hitting about the 35, they start blitzing more because they're trying to keep you out of field goal range. Or some guys, it's not till you get into the low red zone or the red zone, then they start bringing pressure to try to keep you out of the end zone. But he was kind of saying, I find that, and once I find that, that's when I know, okay, when we get here, let's call some screens, or let's keep extra protection, and I'm going to get man coverage, let's call some shots downfield. So it was really well thought out process. And that's something I had heard of some similar stuff, but just to hear him articulate it is nice to know that you have a guy thinking that way. And you think that, oh, everybody probably thinks that way. They really, not everybody does, unfortunately. You kind of find as you see, meet and hear some more of these coaches talk, some guys just like, hey, this is what we're on.
Yeah. So. And then, I love this quote. He was trying to like be careful about his wording and not curse or anything like that. Cause it was like a coach's clinic, basically. Yeah. He goes, touchdowns win games, field goals will get your ass beat. I was like, yeah, I like that. don't over complicate that. But if you've got 40 minutes to kill, and in fact, if you got less than that, cause you can, you know, get the video up to like 1.5 or 1.25 speed or whatever, it is very, yeah, I was iffy about this trick hit hire. You know, I was like, oh God, like, can't you get a guy that runs a flashy offense or something? But the dude game plans and the dude prepares really, really well. It just, I hate to say it, it just seemed like at Georgia State and Florida Atlantic, I mean, sometimes you get dealt a really crappy cast of characters, and he made the most of it at Florida Atlantic. I think they set like, you know, a plethora of school rushing records that year. Yeah. With Devin Singletary. So, you know, sometimes you get dealt a crappy hand when it comes to the quarterback play. So, you know,
I think they had two guys, I think they had two guys over 800 yards rushing that year, two different backs over 800 yards. those are the two I noticed at the top. Because Singletary, I think Singletary ended up being the leading rusher, but he didn't get the most carries. He was right. He was not far off from another guy that was over 800 yards, might have been close to 900. But yeah, he wasn't afraid to pound the rock there. And I think, and you guys have done some research, tell me what you think. This is probably the most talent he's ever had at his disposal offensively.
Yeah. I mean,
Devin Singletary is an NFL running back, but outside of him, their quarterbacks were supposedly pretty bad that year at FAU. I know some of the FAU people we've talked to have kind of said the quarterbacks weren't very good, but he made the most out of the offensive line and ran the ball really well. But probably the most talent he's seen. You've got some guys that can play in the NFL in this offense.
Yep. Here's the question. I guess I'm going to be the wet blanket here. So 2 years at Georgia State, right? First year, wins 7 games, wins the Cure Bowl, and then goes 2-10 the following year, and then heads off to West Virginia. Georgia State has gone to a bowl game in 3 straight years since his departure, one of which with the exact same quarterback, Dan Ellington, who threw for 22 touchdowns, 2,700 yards, some good talent on that 2019 team at Georgia State.
And somebody just hired their, I think somebody just hired their OC to a bigger.
Yeah. Virginia Tech just hired their OC to be their QB coach and passing game coordinator. So
it's not a hire without risk. I don't think it's not, like I said, I don't think it's a home run. Like, it's not like this is going to work 100%, but I think the way he thinks about the game and the way that he'll kind of just, it's going to be a little bit different. The schemes aren't going to be the same. I don't know how much of an RPO guy he is. That'll be interesting. I think he's probably more of a quarterback run guy. He was a student coach at West Virginia under Rich Rod when Pat White and Steve Slayton and Noel Devine were there. So that's kind of where he cut his teeth, with that kind of offense. And then you've seen other clips, you watch him, they'll run the quarterback. I don't think it's a home run. I think there could be some issues, but I don't think he's terrible. I think, and it certainly seems like they reached out to some other guys and it didn't work out. I'm pretty sure Willie Korn was, they reached out to him, and it was he ended up going to where I think he was interested. But if Coastal was going to give him a little bit more money, make it a little bit sweeter, he'd stay. So, you know, I don't think it was for lack of trying, but I think this guy's solid. But there is some risk. There is some concern with the stats. You know, eventually you are what the stats are. Like, we kept trying to hope the defense last couple of years would turn around, but eventually it was, hey man, their stats are terrible. They're not very good. Like, the stats are, you are what the stats are at a certain point. So that's the scary part. And that's the part that gives you some hesitation. You hope it was personnel driven more than anything. But there is a possibility it wasn't. And that's the scary part of this hire. That's why it's not a total home run in my eyes.
Right. And, you mentioned that the defense wasn't great. And I think I asked this question after the Tulane game and just kind of phrased it as such, like, Jeff, I mean, the defense, like, you're 11 games into this. You are what you are at this point, right? And that's where he kind of had the Freudian slip of, well, I mean, I've seen them, you know, and spots not be.
That was before the Tulane. It was the home game before.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I think we were there in person.
No, I think it was on, I think it was the Zoom. It was the Zoom.
Yeah, he did say they've played well at times.
Yeah. And, you know, you are kind of what you are. And, you know, this, I'm with you, Seth, that it seems like this could just blow up in Jeff's face, but, you know, stranger things have happened. I'm not poo-pooing this hire. I think the recruiting is going to be a key component for him. And I mean, we still don't really know if he's going to be the one calling plays. It could be one of those things where he's the OC. He's the OC, right? And then Jeff Scott calls the plays. I mean, that's still up for.
I would be shocked if he's not coming to call plays, because otherwise, why would he leave? I think.
Well, have you been to Morgantown?
He was making more money. He loves Morgantown. That's the thing.
That's an issue. And, you know, there's the sliding doors of, you know, Clint Trickett could have been a USF quarterback when he was transferring.
This guy loves Morgantown.
He bleeds Morgantown, blue and gold, or whatever their numbers.
Don't know if you guys remember this, but when Clint decided to transfer out of Florida State, it was between West Virginia and USF for Clint Trickett. And it was, okay, does Willie Taggart go for Clint, or does he go for Stephen Bench? Nope. Those were the two transfer possibilities. Clint goes to West Virginia, lights it up. Stephen Bench goes to USF in a terrible quarterback room situation. And then, you know, mentors a young Quentin Flowers in 2014, 2015, and now has become a man about town in Tampa and, you know, chopping it up with Colin and Sean King on DK Nation. And
if you want to see more from Stephen Bench about the Georgia-Alabama game, you may have something later this weekend with myself and Colin.
Look at that. A seamless plug for you guys. But that's a real sliding doors kind of thing where, Clint was, because USF desperately needed a quarterback. And that's what I remember. I remember talking to my Florida State friends thinking, man, we really need Clint. He's like, yeah, he's not going to y'all. It's like, well, shit. well, shit. But
got your roads. Take me home.
Seriously.
They all can't go home.
They can't resist the country roads.
Can we be completely frankly honest that Corn turned down job?
I don't know what. Corn turned it down, you think?
Yeah, Corn probably turned it down and leveraged a bigger contract to Coastal. But if I could be so frank as to say.
I was encouraged that he was offered. That was encouraging to me. I would have been more discouraged about this hire if it came out that this was choice number one. They didn't talk to anybody else. That to me would have been a sign of, what are we doing here? Like, we didn't talk to anybody else, but it seemed like they went out and talked to some guys. There are some guys on our list that, first of all, let me tell you about Varner Jordan Bond Consulting. Okay. Willie Korn, Rays. Brennan Marion, new job in Rays. Joe Lunny Jr., new job, Rays. I mean,
we just get people hired.
Agency to cut, break us off something, you know.
Seriously. I mean, my Lord.
We know quality.
And sometimes quantity.
Just name every potential offensive quarter next time, and you guys would be good.
I didn't even think about Trickett because he wasn't calling. I was like, he's definitely going to hire somebody that's calling plays. Like, that would be crazy to go hire somebody that's not calling plays right now. This is kind of for your job to make this hire. He has experience calling plays, but I was kind of looking at play callers
currently in
recently.
The year of our Lord 2021/2022.
They makes must sense. Have ran to each other. Recruiting to Carlo Donaldson. Like, I mean, I'm sure they
guarantee these guys have known each other for a long time.
I have tried to make the connection. Brad Scott and Rick never crossed paths at Florida State. They never crossed paths at South Carolina. Like,
didn't Brad coach the offensive line?
Oh, no. Yes, in tight ends. And then he was the OC for a little bit.
These guys know each other. Old O-line coaches, I'm sure. They know each other.
So the only other connection in the staff is Xavier Dye. Because Dye was also from the O'Brien staff.
Oh.
But like, Dye must have said, I mean, I'm just purely speculating at this point, because Dye was the primary recruiter for DeCarlo Donaldson as well as Travis Trickett. And there, I mean, I'm sure there was something there. And at some point, you know, Jeff probably said like, hey, Cam Akin, Bobby Bentley, like die. Like, who are some guys that, you know, we're looking for this type of offensive coordinator who gels well, who's, you know, character guy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure, you know, the offensive staff gave their, you know, 2 cents on it. And I would imagine that was their hot board, was who gels well with this team. Cause that's their whole philosophy at this point, is gelling. That's the biggest connection to me, was Xavier Dye and Travis are back together. Best friends.
I think they called Pat White for a reference.
probably not.
I thought that was the funniest thing, that it's like Travis Trickett mentored Pat White
when he was a student. That's coaching resume building right there, boys, right in action.
Right there.
It's Pat White.
Definitely an off the wall. I mean, I did extensive research, and I did what you did, Nate. I was trying to find connections from anywhere and everywhere. Like, I found Coach Mo's, like, offense. Like, I've made a connection from Coach Mo when he was, like, in the high school circuit to, like, an offensive coordinator from, it wasn't Kent State, Bowling Green. And I was like, I was pulling names just out of everywhere. I was like, there's got to be like, I was like, what's the space from It's Always Sunny, just connecting the dots from all the coaches.
Seriously.
And I didn't even have Travis Trickett. Like, this name came out of nowhere.
Yeah. It was a bit of a shocker.
A little bit.
And then a bit of a, ooh. And then it's that one video where the girl's, that was the higher.
When she's trying the kombucha for the first time.
Yeah, that.
I need Alex to do that, but it's just like Trickett's recruiting, this time at Samford, Georgia State.
That was me when I first saw the name. Yeah, as I did my research. That's my state of emotion. So the thing is, you didn't have to hire Willie Korn to get an upgrade. Like, I thought that offense helps you hit your ceiling, but you didn't have to go get him just to upgrade. I think
you could have hired us to upgrade.
I mean, I'm available. I've called plays
for a lot less than what you're paying.
Not a lot less.
I would do it for 100K.
I probably would. Yeah, I would do that. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let's a third. All right. I'll take that. You know, hey man, if we want to just stick with RPOs, I can call three plays a game and hey, figure it out.
I mean, Timmy, figure it out. NCAA 14, man. I had great success calling two plays.
Listen, yeah, called
four verts and read option out of the shotgun has won me multiple national titles.
I've coached pro 20, you know, 12 personnel, 21 personnel. We've gone 10 personnel spread. I've gone 21 personnel veer. I mean, I'm all over the board.
You know, if you want to get real kooky, I have won multiple national championships with running the triple with some spread elements attached to it as well. If I'm feeling froggy against a 3-4 defense, which that will be my issue if I ever become an offensive coordinator, trying to figure out how to run a triple option against a 3-4. Always had trouble with that in NCAA 14 for some reason.
I ran like five different plays at Emory and Henry in my last game. I knew it was going to be my last game coaching. I ran like a bunch of Emory and Henry in a bunch of different ways. It was great.
Love Emory and Henry. That's that good old school, just fuck with the coordinator offense.
So I went Emory and Henry and then jet sweeped one of the guys from the stack and then had the running back as a wing. He slipped right up the middle of the field.
That might be peak offseason content, is breaking down these, you know, weird fucking like all 11 personnel.
I was a trick play guy. You always got to have a bullet in the gun.
That was one thing that I liked. And I don't know if Seth, if you heard him get this, but he mentioned that he has about four at shots. Any time, six to eight special, like, I got a video special shots
with He's like, I got a video with like 400 trick plays on it. I was like, all right, dude, relax.
And he was like, and I called him. And I was like, oh, all right. He
points over to the GA. How many is it? The guy's like, 400. He's like, yeah, 400. I was like, all right. But no, I think you got to have one. I had a younger coach with me, and he started calling plays. I was like, have a trick play in your back pocket every game. And then, like, if you're doing JV football, like I did when I was really young, and you don't exchange film, you can run the same one every game. It's great.
Perfect. One underrated thing that might come from this is a potential more transfers coming in. It's particularly another wide receiver that is on the market currently, Sam Brown, and with Nicholas Shivadi deciding to transfer out. I think the staff would feel comfortable if they got one more receiver. I don't know why, because we have more receivers now than I think ever.
Is Sam Brown Canadian?
God, I hope not. He's from Savannah, Georgia.
Hey, the Canadian receivers, it's the Highlander at USF. There can only be one.
There can only be one.
All right.
Fine.
Joe comes in, hit the brick.
They fight each other in the pit of the new locker room, just waiting to go off each other. Sam Brown is a guy to watch to come transfer in. He was pretty darn good for West Virginia. I think he led the team in targets, I think, the year before. This year, production kind of went down, and he went out in the middle of the year and just decided to transfer. That is also in the portal, Winston Wright Jr. I don't think Trickett directly recruited him the way that he did Sam Brown, but Winston Wright has been all Big 12 for the past 2 years and has like 1,100 yards and 17 touchdowns or something like that. So he might be a guy to watch, but I would look to see a receiver transfer out of West Virginia to come down here. Either one of them.
Little Winston Wright, slot receiver. Also from Savannah, Georgia. There you go.
Nice little area.
Interesting. I do love Savannah.
Area. Great little town. I need to go back there.
My wife went to college there.
She goes to Savannah State?
Savannah College of Art and Design.
Ooh.
Historic preservation degree.
That's the city to go for it.
Yes. And then we moved to Florida where nobody does it, so.
Oh, you got Ivor down here. Never mind.
She's just trying to preserve her sanity while she raises the three children. So
there you go.
We'll get back to it though.
I mean, that's it for me. If you guys have anything else you want to add, I just wanted to kind of get on and just talk about the hire a little bit. And you know, once it becomes official, I would expect within the next 48 hours, if not tomorrow, if we're being real. First team meeting tomorrow.
So
I would probably assume announcement will come tomorrow morning. I'm going to guess 11:20-ish.
I'm going
in the morning.
I'm going to go 12 o'clock.
Noon on the dot. So right when everyone gets out of church, see, they can look at their phones. Yep. Bang. Trent Trickett.
Travis Hired. Trickett. Trent Trick.
What's that? Trent Trickett? I mixed him and Clint Trickett's names together. Boy, sure, that'd be a terrible press release to release at noon. Give the guy wrong. Travis Trickett.
Oh, Lord.
Anything else from that video, Steve, just real, that pops in your head from the game planning video?
I took a lot of notes.
I thought his third down, I was really impressed by his third down, how meticulous he was, and how that was interesting because he talked about basically, he didn't name him, but working for Chris Hatcher, who's an air raid guy, there was a Mike Leach guy. He said when he was, it seems like they really didn't like each other, would be my guess, that they didn't mesh well. Because he was the OC under Hatcher for 1 year, Samford, then went to FAU, which he might have just been like, I'll take the job, whatever, just to get out of there. But he's Hatcher's an air raid guy. Mac Leach guy's like, well, you need like three plays for third. You know, he's like, you need like three plays for a third down situation. He's like, are you kidding me? So they're totally opposite. He's not an air raid guy. Who air raid philosophy is kind of we run what we run. So that was kind of interesting. He's not a we run what we run. He's a we run what we can run that will work on this particular defense. So I thought that was interesting to hear him really get in depth in third downs. Really good video. Steve shared it with me. Go out and find it. It was really, really it's some good insight.
And I mean, it's 4 years old at this point, so I'm sure it's evolved a little bit more and a little bit different. And I think my favorite part about it is he didn't really show his hand too much. He didn't really talk about the plays that he likes to run or he kind of mentioned, he's like, yeah, I like to run out of 10 personnel. I'm not afraid to do 20, 10, 12, 11, whatever it is. I mean, it's a spread offense. You know, you're not going to get too terribly dynamic.
It's a perfect coaching clinic talk. You get to give a real in-depth on your process, but you don't actually show anything to anyone.
Right.
So,
and like the third down thing I thought was fantastic. Yeah. I wish I screen grabbed it, but basically he has like, I think actually one of the coaches asked it. He has 4 to 6 plays that he has for like third down and either 1 or 2 yards.
Yeah,
third down short, and three.
Like short, medium, long, like middle long.
Medium long. Yeah. Like he has multiple plays for each one. And he mentioned like they kind of bleed in every once in a while. If it's like a third and a long two.
And that's how we would have to. When I was working at Tusculum, I had to do, because I was the youngest guy on the youngest guy on staff in terms of working at the college level. So I had to do. And then our GA quit right before the season. So I had to do like all the scouting for the advance. And that's how we break it down. Third and short, third and medium, third and long, red zone and, red zone and short, red zone and medium, red zone and long. Like we would have to get into all that. So it was good to hear him kind of get into that and how he broke it down and how he got really nitty gritty. And if you're going to get that granular, you can get some really good pieces of information that'll help you. So, hopefully it works out well, but there is some risk. So I kind of go in, we're glass half full guys.
We don't positivity blog.
We don't quite smell TROUBLE yet, but we'll see.
There was there's like two things from that clip. I mean, there's, I took so many notes from that thing. He keeps a blitz beater in his back pocket basically at all times.
Seems like,
I think he doesn't go into a week without knowing a specific 5 or 6 blitz beaters, for the defense that they're playing. Like, it's not the same. Like, he's not going to run a screen every single time to beat a blitz. He'll do something different every time. And he said if his biggest thing is he self scouts as well. He'll go back through his own film and say, shit, like, we're running the ball a lot to the left side behind our, all conference left tackle and left guard. How can we disguise that? We have this power ISO play, what can we do? And his biggest thing is to use motion, use misdirections and to really do it. And I sent you the clip of it in that Kennesaw State game. They ran a screen to the outside while the left tackle was pulling in an empty set. Just the stupidest looking play. Like, if you watch it, it makes no sense. But the biggest thing it did was the linebacker who should have made the play, like, just froze, didn't move. And so I thought that was fantastic to see. That was, first game of the year for them. And then he has get back on track plays for quarterbacks. Easy bread and butter things after your quarterback throws an interception, gets fucking rocked. He says they're not home runs. They're just easy, get you back right on track for a quarterback. And I think that's vital for a guy like Timmy and a guy like Trey. To get back on track as easily and quickly as possible. So, I could go on and on because it's great. But yeah, I killed 40 minutes tonight, listen to the guy talk and ramble on and pump himself up and pat himself on the back for 40 minutes. It's fantastic.
Hey, check this out. This is allowed too. You can throw screens at the tailbacks.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Can you go to that play? Just because I think it's fucking hilarious.
If you have the timestamp,
3 minutes and 12 seconds. It's just, you know, it's stupid. Like, but it worked.
You know what? It probably was a read, just seeing it real quick. It was probably the quarterback, which is another thing. I think he's not afraid of the quarterback run game, which is, I think, vital with who you have a quarterback. So it looks like you got some kind of could be some kind of trap right here. Maybe depending on them, but you got the bubble up here. So basically inside you got that. And then out here you got three guys. So if you only match two out there, we're going to throw it, getting playmakers the ball in space. If this guy was out and it was three out there, and then the quarterback keeps it right there. Easy read for the quarterback.
I'll say something that should enlighten people. That was exactly how the Gulf Coast offense worked.
Yeah.
Like that was Marquez Valdez scaling every single time was just, oh shit, you're only going to have two people out there. Great, easy read for my quarterback. They don't have to do much.
To be fair, they did do some of that this past year,
right?
But they did. I didn't think they didn't pair it up a ton with like quarterback run. They did other things, like they paired jet sweep with sometimes count quarterback counter and some different stuff there. But make it easy on the quarterback. Can you count to three? All these guys can do that. Okay, they've only got two. We've got three. Bang, throw it out there. That's easy, 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 easy. And then when they did that and they threw it out to like Jimmy Horn and let him get outside, there are times where they threw Jimmy Horn's bubbles and he picked up 25 yards. Might have been Tulsa, maybe. Or it was, I know that it happened at one of the home games, but you don't have to be crazy complicated. I think you just have to be sound. And I think he's sound. So I feel like it's an upgrade. We'll obviously see in spring, hopefully, we're allowed out to watch and we could see up close, but then we'll see if it's an upgrade, but it feels like it will be just because I think he'll have a stronger running game and then simplify the passing game. I think those little areas of improvement will help this offense immensely. It didn't need a ton. You didn't need to tweak a lot. You could have added a bunch with like the coastal option stuff. That would have added a bunch and really take it to the next level. But you didn't need to do a ton to improve. And so I think this should lead to improvement. So you have to be happy there. But there is the caveat of, why were some of his other offenses not great?
Right. Well, folks, just under the hour mark, let's wrap it up, call it a night. I still feel like crap a little bit, so I want to get into bed and take some Mucinex PM and pass out. Thank you for joining us for another edition, the brand new edition of the Bluminati podcast, the 2022 edition. Pumped for this upcoming season. I was on Retcher and Beckles and Retcher on Wednesday or Thursday. Still fully believe that this is a 6-win team. This is a bowl team. So hopefully we can see some shades of competent offense, competent defense in the spring, and it'll follow through the fall. But for now, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go Bulls. For Nathan, Seth, and Stieg, have a good night.
Good Bulls.
Good Bulls.